the scandal involving Albo, ASIC, and ABC Bullion. Welcome to Citizens Insight, the Citizens Party's interview series on matters of national and international importance. And my guest today, back so soon, is the one and only John Adams. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Robbie.
And today we're going to discuss the scandal involving Albo, ASIC, and ABC Bullion. So, John, you were here very recently.
4 weeks ago, actually.
4 weeks ago. I think you are the first person in the history of Citizens Insight to appear back to back, which means we should do more of these shows. But anyway, so we're going to do this is unusual, but we're doing it for a very good reason, because our last show triggered some interesting developments inside ASIC, which have revealed all sorts of things and confirmed all sorts of things. So and that relates to one of our props on the table here. So I'll let you explain. What have we got?
Well, I mean, the interesting thing, Robbie, is that when we were here 4 weeks ago, we talked openly about systemic corruption at ASIC. We talked about them lying to the court, lying to Parliament, lying to the press. We talked about rigging investigations. We talked about the perversion of justice in terms of ASIC. And we cited, obviously, some key data from ASIC, the 2023 staff survey, in which 1,056 staff ranked ASIC as an organisation at 2%.
Which is 60% of staff.
61% of staff ranked ASIC at 2% in terms of organisational level quality. Motivation was 22%. Satisfaction was 18%. And intention to stay was 31%. And I had said 4 weeks ago, Robbie, that this was the worst set of results probably in the history of the Commonwealth. Now, one thing I will reveal to the audience is that in the last 4 weeks, someone, and I won't say who, did a consultancy job about the ABC, as in the national broadcaster, 20 years ago, and there was a measure in that survey 20 years ago where the managing director was ranked at 5%. So shortly after this piece of consultancy work had been done, the managing director of the ABC, the Australian National Broadcaster, he departed. So Longa gets 2%, which is worse than the ABC back in terms of 20 years ago, and yet there is no sense from Longa or Sarah Court or the other people in the commissioners or the senior executive team that there needs to be a fundamental change of leadership. So we did the show, and I think, Robbie, you had said to me after we finished, you said, we've done about five shows since 2018. This was the most aggressive that I had been on camera, because I felt so strongly about this ASIC issue. And this was obviously off the backdrop of the Bragg report that said that ASIC needs to be abolished. And then it just so happens that 2 weeks ago, I'm up in New South Wales and you call me in a panic. And you get an envelope which is right here. I'm now holding.
You're seeing it for the first time.
So we're gonna put this up on the screen now. The envelope is an official ASIC envelope that has the official ASIC stamp and the stamp of the Commonwealth, and it has a handwritten note saying Robbie and John Adams. So Robbie, just so we can be clear, in the history of the Citizens Party, how many official ASIC envelopes has the Citizens Party received since you've been here for the last 30 years?
Two.
Okay, so this is the second or this is the third?
This is the second.
The second. Okay, well, so just by way of context, how about you talk about the first one, let's talk about the second one.
Well, the first one was circa 2005, 2006, because our publication, the New Citizen newspaper, had run an article by me on the danger of derivatives. And it was called, the headline was called "The Mother of All Bubbles." And this article had warned that derivatives was this toxic instrument that was leading to all sorts of systemic risks in the financial system, and it would bring down the global financial system. And that was in 2005, that article was published.
Yes.
One of our supporters in Perth took that article to his accountant, who sent it to ASIC, and ASIC sent us, that is myself, Craig Isherwood, the founder and leader of the party, and Nolene Isherwood, who is also one of the directors of our company, letters, please explain letters, threatening us with jail for practicing, for giving financial advice without a financial services license.
Right.
And we had to explain why what we were doing was not financial advice. We were just warning. And ASIC, to their credit, ASIC, well, it, not to their credit, it was very, it would have been unreasonable for them not to take our explanation. So nothing came of it. But we always found it funny that they jumped on the people warning about derivatives rather than the people trading in derivatives who 2 years later did blow up the global financial system. Anyway, that was our only experience with ASIC, John, yes, previously. And that was direct to us from the top saying, please explain, until 2 weeks ago when this came in.
Yes. Before we get to this letter, I mean, maybe this is something for us to pursue in 2025 together. I do have a very big problem where federal law says there are certain subjects you cannot talk about unless if you have a license. Now, when it comes to financial advice, there's a lot of Australians have historically made a lot of bad decisions when it comes to money, and you need good quality advice from people who are properly educated and have the expertise to give proper advice. So I don't have an issue with that, but where you get into a situation where people want to enter into the political square and make commentary about the economy or the financial markets or financial instruments like derivatives, there should be no place in federal law where we're going to get censored for actually warning the public about the dangers of the financial system. So obviously in 2005, 2006, your call on derivatives was actually correct. Because we had the global financial crisis in 2008. And in the last few years, I've been very active on YouTube talking about this global debt bubble because it is the biggest that we've ever seen. And in 2018, I did warn about economic Armageddon and I had a six scenario model. And in that model, I talked about deflation and inflation. Well, the big event that happened in March of 2020 was the announcement of QE to infinity. And we've just had an explosion of inflation and we have a massive cost of living crisis at the moment. So my commentary, your commentary pre-GFC was correct. My commentary on the economy pre-COVID, it was on the money. And so, here's the thing. You're not being paid for financial advice.
Nope.
I'm not being paid to provide financial advice, but we should be free in this country to talk openly about these topics without any fear of sanction from ASIC. And you know whether we can convince parliamentarians in Canberra to change the law so that free speech is actually protected in terms of the financial system. I think that's very important. So that sets the context there. But this letter, Robbie. So this letter is someone felt compelled, assuming this is authentic, and I've just been here, just so the audience knows, I've been here for about half an hour. I have spoken to multiple officials of the Citizens Party, and I asked each one of them, do you believe this is an authentic letter? And to a T, everyone here at the Citizens Party here in Coburg, Victoria, believes that this is an authentic letter from an ASIC official.
Which is a question you've got to ask, because you know, when a letter like this turns up, you go, okay, what's the likelihood here? And on balance, it is extremely unlikely that this would not be a genuine letter from someone in ASIC.
I'll get to the point I'm about to make in a moment. But if someone with an official ASIC envelope addresses it to Robbie and John Adams, and then inside the envelope is a handwritten note on official ASIC stationery saying confidential due to fear of culture. Dear John Adams and Robbie, your videos are 100% spot on. So when they say your videos, obviously me and Martin North on the interest of the people have been doing a lot of videos. You've done some videos here at the Citizens Party, but which video did they respond to immediately after writing? It was our last video in which we said systemic corruption at ASIC. And so we have someone who has been at ASIC for a while. We won't give you, they've actually told us how long they've been at ASIC. We won't give you the time frame, but not
long enough to know what they're talking about.
Absolutely. And obviously someone close to the action in terms of investigations. And so this person feels compelled to write to us and say, our videos are 100% spot on about corruption. It's the worst it's ever been. And then this is the perhaps the more extraordinary statement in this handwritten letter, Robbie, is that they said it is worse than what you actually portray. So when you know, people call me a conspiracy theorist, Robbie, and we've just had some recent correspondence with Michael Western Media where I was accused again of being a conspiracy theorist. But when people call John Adams a conspiracy theorist, and I say there is systemic corruption, and this is you know, similar to New South Wales and New South Wales Police in the 90s, the Queensland Police in the 80s, and then you have an ASIC official of substantial standing, a veteran, writing to us saying it is 100% spot on. I mean, Robbie, till today, we've had this letter for about 2-3 weeks. I'm still pinching myself. I'm thinking to myself, can it really be that bad that people feel compelled to risk their career? You know, who knows whether they have a mortgage, whether who knows whether they have children, but they're willing to risk their career and risk their job to write a handwritten letter to the Citizens Party and me and saying, you are on the money. What an extraordinary set of events.
Well, I think it is because it's that bad, combined with the fact that outside of ASIC, there is such a stink about this now, thanks to the inquiry that you drove, that Senator Bragg chaired, that based on he called it based on the report that you wrote, which was the fourth big inquiry in 10 years, but the biggest of all four of them, really, because even though the Royal Commission was one of those inquiries, and the Royal Commission, the banking, and ASIC did cop a hiding at that Royal Commission, it wasn't the only thing on the dock, right? It wasn't the only entity on the dock. So this was a big inquiry into ASIC itself. And so if you're inside ASIC, and then you're seeing all the commentary coming out of it, you're seeing people of real standing calling for ASIC to be abolished, etc., you're feeling under siege. And then if you're someone like this person seems to be, who actually wants to be there for the right reasons and do their job, they think that they're there to regulate the financial system, they're being told they're not allowed to, they're being stopped from doing their job, well, why would you want to go down with that sinking ship? Right, that's what happens when you're under siege. You feel demoralized. This thing's going to come down around our ears. Well, what can I do? I can reach out and confirm that these people who are saying it are right.
Yes. Now, the one thing I'll say, Robbie, just so that everyone's crystal clear, as soon as you brought this to my attention, you took a screenshot of it, you sent it to me digitally. I have sent this to the National Anti-Corruption Commission, and I because I have two matters. Before the NAC, one of them is the former Deputy Chair Karen Chester, which we mentioned last time.
Yep.
We're going to talk about this ABC bully investigation, and that's sort of the in terms of the new revelation. But I have two matters before the NAC, and I say to the NAC, and if the NAC's watching this, we're not making this up. Mm. People inside ASIC are saying that corruption is real, happening in real time, and it is worse than one can imagine. It is just an extraordinary set of events. And again, we have sycophants in the press, we have sycophants, we have some sycophants in the parliament, we have some very good critics of ASIC in the parliament, but there needs to be a proper accounting of what the hell is happening at ASIC. And they use every trick in the book to conceal information and try to pretend that everything's fine, but yet the staff survey and then this handwritten letter is saying that everything is not fine. And the fact that someone close to the investigation sort of area is saying that allegations of corruption are real. What does that actually mean for the integrity of investigations, both historic and going forward, Robbie?
Well, it means there is none, and that corresponds with there is a third data source here, which was I think it was the ASIC veteran quoted by the ABC, who said.
They're crying at their desks.
But specifically, I believe that person's allegations related to the senior leadership of ASIC interfering and stopping investigations going forward. That level of interference from the top to the people who are just trying to do their job. That's extraordinary. That is when you really get into the nuts and bolts of corruption, right? Because this is not an agency that investigates enough. They only do 250 investigations a year. That's what they claim. Out of all the 10,000 plus complaints, they only do 250 a year. And if even then people are being told from the top, this is how you're going to do it, you're not going to do this, you're going to do that, then that really stinks.
And you know, I just want to put this on the table so we're all clear on this. I have sources who are telling me that the leadership at ASIC are making decisions on investigations irrespective of the facts and the evidence. That's not a proper investigation, and that's an improper use of public power if you are rigging an investigation or you're determining whether to take action or not take action where the evidence tells you you have to go in a different direction. And that's what happened in this ABC bullion sort of situation. And before we get into, Robbie, in terms of what happened with ABC bullion and my sort of issues that have been spanning over the last few years, we did talk about the NAC. There has been some criticism of the NAC in the last few weeks. I think Anthony Klein at the Claxton has been doing some reporting about the commissioner and the decisions around robo-debt and his involvement and not involvement. But you've just received a letter from the NAC this morning. So how about you go into that letter?
Well, it just so happens that this came the morning that you were due to arrive to have this interview. And what's notable about that, of course, is the only reason I wrote to the NAC, well, no, one of two reasons I wrote to the NAC is because what I complained about Scott Morrison for really got up my nose, and I think it's a scandal. But second, this guy here was harassing me for 6 months. You need to start, here's the NAC, we've got this new procedure now, we've got this new institution, we know there's all this corruption, use the process. So I thought, okay, this justifies it. So I made a complaint to the NAC about the fact that Scott Morrison, when he resigned from Parliament after 20 months on the backbench, after losing the election, went straight into two roles where he personally gets to profit from the huge public expenditure on the AUKUS deal that he negotiated in secret with Boris Johnson in the British government and Mike Pompeo, the US Secretary of State. And one of those roles, he actually, which is for a venture capital firm, he joined that firm with Mike Pompeo. They're both there now making money out of investments related to AUKUS, which are being paid for by the Australian taxpayer. And one aspect of the complaint was that something that's hard to prove, which is that is Morrison going to be using his special information that he gleaned as the Prime Minister involved in these negotiations for private gain now? That's one part. The other part was his use. He'd hardly sat in the Parliament as a backbencher for those 20 months. Instead, he was going around the world doing other things, starting to feather his nest, I would say, for his career outside of Parliament. And his use of his office as a public official to do that should also be looked at as improper. Anyway, so that was the investigation. Now, the NAC is supposed to come back to you within 90 days if they feel your complaint doesn't qualify for corruption. Mm-hmm. We thought that was significant. So it's been, I've even lost count, 150 days or something?
About 150 days, yeah.
And so finally, this letter came today, Mr. Robert Barwick, and there's just a squiggle on it. There's no identifier in terms of a person writing this letter. Your referral contains concerns about the conduct of former Prime Minister Scott Morrison, blah, blah, blah. After careful consideration, the Commission has decided to take no action in relation to the matters you have raised. The Commission is of the view that there is no viable hypothesis of corrupt conduct in relation to Mr. Morrison's acceptance of the private sector roles he has undertaken following his resignation from Parliament. In the absence of any information to suggest that he has misused official information obtained whilst in office. The fact that the roles may be related to a project he advanced when in office, I think the use of that word advanced there is a bit rich, John. He did more than advance. I've advanced the policy of a people's bank, a postal bank, for 4 years. That's advancing a policy. He signed secret deals, this guy. Anyway, the fact that the roles may be related to a project he advanced when in office does not of itself support an hypothesis that when in office, he engaged in any breach of public trust or abuse of office. His conduct as a private individual after leaving Parliament is not within the concept of corrupt conduct. In other words, not within the NAC's jurisdiction. Accordingly, the information you have provided does not raise a corruption issue within the meaning of Section 9 of the Act, and the Commission will take no further action. So your reading of that is they've got Section 9 wrong and should have said Section 8.
Correct.
But it means that they're saying that no, that doesn't qualify as corruption.
Correct. So what you would have to prove is that that Morrison used specific confidential or classified information, or in the case of McBride, Morrison took an official Commonwealth document which he was not entitled to take as a private citizen, and then use that for a commercial advantage. So, and obviously now in the case of McBride, he confessed to it. So the reason why David McBride's in jail is he confessed. Now, when you don't have a confession, to actually get enough evidence to get an institution like the NAC to investigate, it's a very high threshold.
As you know, I thought it was a long shot to get a real investigation of this, but I thought there was enough there that the NAC should evaluate it and it do the investigation. It said absence of information. My attitude was, well, that's its job to do that investigation. It's decided not to do that. But what I presented as my complaint is very different and much more general than what you have presented in your complaints to the NAC, which are much more specific instances that would be much harder for the NAC to turn down.
Well, all I can say is that in regards to the Deputy Chair, Karen Chester, we're approaching 400 days since that complaint has gone to the NAC. I have sources saying that there is an investigation. Certain people have been interviewed. Now, the one thing I'll say is in 400 days, the NAC has not picked up the phone to ask me any questions, which I find highly distressing because there's a lot of very specific, complex information that I've presented. And if they're not going to talk to me, I don't have confidence as to whether they actually know and understand the gravity of what I'm actually trying to tell them.
Combine that with the fact that it's not even the email or the letter doesn't even have anyone's name on it. The NAC is a real black box. Anthony Klan's criticisms, I think, are fairly justified.
Well, here's the thing. The NAC's been operating now for about 13, 14 months. At some point, the NAC has to land a blow.
Sure.
Because at some point, people are going to say, well, why did we set up this anti-corruption body if they can't find corruption? I mean, no one believes in this country the government's 100% clean. There are some dirty people inside the Commonwealth in terms of the federal government. So the NAC has to deliver. When will they deliver? We'll have to wait and see.
But if they did set up the NAC to look like it was hunting for corruption, but actually never really intend to hunt for corruption, that would be a very Australian thing to do. that is how Australia, that's what Australia excels at in terms of the way Australian governments work. And I would argue, in practice, ASIC has pretty much been of a similar kind.
Okay. Now, Robbie, so we talked about ASIC, and we have people inside ASIC saying that allegations of corruption are legitimate and real and substantive. We obviously have now talked about the NAC. You're now out of the NAC process. Let's see if the Citizens Party goes back to the NAC with a new complaint.
No, I'm demoralised, mate. You've ruined it for me.
I ruined it for you. So now we get into what I've been working on for 3.5 years. And here's the thing, Robbie. This whole journey of ABC Bullion and then ASIC, it's not something I asked. Like, this is not something I wanted to do. In early 2021, I was obviously doing things about economic analysis, talking about debt bubbles, monetary policy. Obviously, there was the whole issue of COVID and the COVID response. And there was a lot of things that I was talking about there, enjoying life. And then two events happened, which I thought to myself, I've got to do something in. Now, again, just for the record, so there's no allegations of conflicts of interest. In early 2021, I was working in the bullion industry. I was the chief economist for one of the sizable dealers in the country. I had joined them in 2018. And then what happened was, in the period of February, March of 2021, I started to hear stories about Perth Mint customers who were not able to obtain their silver where they had invested it in certain products. And so this was not one source, there was multiple sources all across the country saying there's something happening at the Perth Mint. So in mid-March of 2021, I went public on Twitter saying that the Perth Mint was in default of their obligations to deliver silver consistent with their terms and conditions. Now, because I had been shadow banned by Twitter, and this is Twitter under the old leadership, not under Elon Musk, I thought 1,000 people would see the tweet. Well, what happened? Within 2 weeks, over 365,000 people across the world saw my declaration that the Perth Mint was in default, and that created a huge firestorm right across the world. I did a lot of interviews. The former CEO, Richard Hayes, was interviewed by ABC Radio Perth. He denied there was anything wrong. And obviously within the space of 6-7 months, he was thrown out of the Perth Mint due to a whole host of allegations of impropriety in terms of happening there. But in this period of time of...
Sorry, just for the... Not to spend too much time on this, but for the benefit of the people who don't know this subject as well as you, the Perth Mint, even though it's the Perth Mint, and there's lots of subsidies in Australia, it's pretty much the cornerstone of the bullion sector in Australia, would you say?
Yes.
And it's owned by the WA government, and and its history goes back to the fact that WA has always been a big resource state, big gold producer, etc.
Yes.
Right. So it's not just one city's mint. It is the establishment bullion company for the country.
Well, you have the Australian Mint, owned by the Australian government, that produces, particularly in terms of our official coinage.
Yeah.
You have the Western Australian Mint, the Perth Mint, that was basically established in the 19th century about the gold rush and all the gold production that was happening in terms of WA. And so now, in this context of March 2021, there's a woman from the south coast of New South Wales who went public and said that she had silver in storage at ABC Bullion. She asked for the storage, she asked for her property back, and she was told it was missing. And then she went public on social media, and she basically said, they don't have my property. So now, I will say, the night that she went public, she actually emailed me. I didn't know this person beforehand, but she had seen me on YouTube. She had emailed me, and I spoke to her the following morning. And I was able to assist her in dealing with the issue that she did. She didn't actually get the silver back, but she got her money back because they wanted to legally kill the issue. And we have all of that well documented from March of 2021. Now, what happened in April of 2021? I had a dinner with an AB who was then an ABC Bullion employee, and now he's no longer an ABC Bullion employee. But at that dinner, we had talked about this woman's situation, we had talked about the Perth Mint, we talked about the industry in general. And at that dinner, this person made a number of allegations against his employer, and they were very serious allegations about the integrity of their storage program. And that's where this whole thing kicked off. And I thought to myself, well, if you have a woman saying her property is missing, if you have an ABC Bullion employee saying that there's something fundamentally wrong, and again, I'm trying to be careful in my words here. What he actually told me was much more serious in terms of a criminal misconduct. But again, it's not that I came up with this. This is not a John Adams conspiracy theory. I was told by an insider, this is what's happening at the company. And so I thought to myself, well, if I'm in the industry, if I am a precious metal investor, if I want to ensure that we have market integrity, someone's going to do something about this. Because when I was told this, I asked, how long has this been going on for? And again, not my words, an ABC Bullion employee said to me, at least a decade.
And let me interject something here. This is the one and only character reference you'll ever get from me. When I met you February 2018, and we first made contact in relation to bail-in.
Yes.
That's when we started talking. You talked to me about gold the very first day, right? It was clear to me your connection to the gold industry and the gold issue. You were not in the industry at the time. You're not employed by anybody, but you were an absolutely true believer. So when you later on did get a role in the industry, and people would call it a conflict of interest, I've always been prepared to say, well, on paper, yes, but I know John, he's absolutely a true believer. And one of your concerns that you expressed to me from the very beginning, which you'd already been expressing, is that there is this problem in the broader industry of bullion being, of sort of paper claims to bullion being traded.
Yes.
That's not backed up by actual bullion. And that's been one of your consistent criticisms all along.
Yes.
Which is why one of the reasons that you were, more than interested in looking into this subject.
Correct. So just so we get the timeline right. So we met in early 2018. At that point, I was an investor, so I was buying physical, you know, silver in particular. I joined the industry in mid-2018. And then around this period of time, around August, September of 2018, that's when I decided to do a five-part series with Martin North about the RBA, their gold holdings, and the audit by the Bank of England. And obviously that issue has been taken up quite aggressively by Gerald Rennick, Senator Rennick, in the Senate. And he's been able to obtain revelations about, I mean, initially we were told a few years ago that when they do gold leasing at the Bank of England, the gold doesn't move. And yet the bars have actually now changed. Yeah. So some bars have been melted down. We've had some new bars. The date of production has changed. And Senator Rennick is basically saying, hang on, if the bars don't move, why have we got new bars? And so I think
RBA Deputy Governor Guy DeBell's excuse was because there was some kind of not chipping, what, like.
What the Deputy Governor of the RBA, the former Deputy Governor, said that the reason why they don't move the bullion around is because it can flake, it can chip, etc. So when I put that suggestion to people around the world who are in the industry, they thought this was a ridiculous suggestion. Yeah. And obviously there are things happening with the RBA's gold holdings, which Senator Rennick has pursued in terms of that sort of situation.
And we've called for them to be brought back to Australia. Why are they over in the Bank of England? They should be here.
100%. I mean, you know, there's been this suggestion by the RBA about, given that London is the centre for gold trading, it's easier if we have it there if we ever want to buy and sell. But yet we haven't bought and sold anything since 1997. So this whole argument, we need to be close to the action, a completely fallacious sort of argument. But coming back to ABC Bulletin. Now, here's the thing, Robbie. At the time, I was told, again, by an ABC Bulletin employee, that ABC Bulletin was the largest dealer in the country, bigger than the Perth Mint, because the Perth Mint has a lot of international clients. But ABC Bulletin was the biggest domestic organisation.
Yeah.
And again, so when I get told this sort of information, I thought to myself, well, I want to see if it's true. I want to see if it's false. Because if it's true, then we have to do something about it. Now, back in 2021, I knew nothing about ASIC. I knew nothing about evidence. I knew nothing about the law, investigations, anything like that. I was just a straight economist, doing macroeconomics and all that sort of stuff. So I what I ended up doing, Robbie, I put a file of evidence together, and I took it to a commercial lawyer in Sydney. I said, I'm going to pay you some money. I want you to read this and tell me what you think. And I basically said, well, this is what I've been told by a couple of sources. Here's a bunch of documentation about this customer's situation who couldn't get her silver out. What do you say about this? And so the lawyer wrote me some advice and saying, there could be something here, there may not be something here, but there needs to be more work done. This allegation needs to be taken to ASIC. So the idea to go to ASIC wasn't my idea. It was actually a commercial lawyer in Sydney. His written advice was, ASIC is the appropriate body to look at this sort of issue. So then I thought to myself, okay, well, let me continue to dig into this situation. And again, I spent a lot of time on not just ABC Bulletin and trying to understand what they were doing or not doing. But one of the other things that I did was I spent a lot of time with you learning about ASIC via the Sterling Inquiry, because I had known that there was a lot of criticisms about ASIC. But I thought to myself, if I'm going to go to this law enforcement body and make some allegations, I want to make sure that I actually understand who this entity is, what they require, and obviously make sure that the information we package is put in a way that they will be able to understand.
Yeah, so it was just a coincidence that the two issues coincided. You're looking at this at the same time our party got involved in the case of the Sterling First Victims in WA, and we started campaigning for an ASIC, for an inquiry into ASIC's failings in that, and then that led to an inquiry. And you were participating in that. You were following that incredibly closely.
Yes.
Also giving good advice, etc., for the campaign, but you're keeping me posted on elements of your investigation, so I could tell that you were doing this to learn as much as you could about how this agency actually worked. What does it take to get ASIC to investigate something, I think, is what you were trying to find out.
Absolutely. And that's when I learned about the investigating less than 1%. And they gave me the idea later on in 2022 to write the inquiry and write the report that triggered the inquiry. But now I should say a few things about this first package. The person at this dinner in April of 2021, that person ended up being our whistleblower. So this person was prepared to commit to a statement about what they genuinely believed was happening at the company. And subsequently it was interviewed by ASIC in 2022. But it wasn't just based on one person's information. And it wasn't just based on one customer. We had, I won't actually say what, we had a bombshell piece of evidence. Yeah. Now, I won't say exactly what it is because I think it's going to be made public very soon. And it's got to be released in a certain format. But dare I say,
let me describe, because I know what you're referring to. It's evidence of the type that anybody in the world would look at it and recognize it as bombshell evidence.
Absolutely.
You don't have to have a degree. You don't have to have a specialization. You would see it and go, oh my God.
Indeed. And so here's the thing. This past week, ABC Bullion has hired a crisis communication consultant. They've said they've engaged lawyers around defamation. Can I say, if ABC Bullion's team is watching this, the bombshell piece of evidence the bombshell piece of evidence that I have that I've had for years that ASIC has, you don't know what it is. And if you did know, I think you'd sort of change your tune. Mm. And dare I say, I'm not even sure the ABC Bullion leadership know that I have this bombshell piece of evidence. So in any case. It was quite concerning, but again, even without this bombshell piece of evidence, the evidence is a group of employees saying a number of incriminating things about the company. So I won't say anything more than that. But beyond that piece of evidence, I just didn't rely on that. I started to look at other things to see. So I think I did a show with Martin in 2022 and I said I did triangulation. So if I try to collect other sources of evidence using different techniques, do I find the same answer or do I find a different answer? And one of the techniques I will go on the record and say here is that I hired private investigators in 2022 and I basically said to the investigators, I'm going to give you a script. You're going to call up ABC Bullion, four calls, four different employees on four different days, and ask them about their storage program. And I want to say, do you get consistent answers or do you get very different answers? And lo and behold, we got four very different answers about the location of the bullion, the circumstances of the bullion, are you allowed to see it? Are you not allowed to see it? All these sort of things. So if you were a customer of ABC Bullion, they told you point blank, it's against company policy to see the vault. You can't see it, you can't look at it. If you want your property, come to our retail store and we will have it there and then. But to independently verify what we're doing, it's against company policy, privacy, security, all these sort of reasons. Now, so obviously the big question going to ASIC in April of 2022 was, where was the gold and silver? Because we have a whistleblower saying that there's a big portion of it missing. We have people inside ASIC, people inside ABC Bullion in terms of number of current and former employees sort of suggesting something very similar. But the question was, well, did it exist? Did it not exist? So, and I spent like part of this quest, the 10 months leading to the first package was, I was looking to see where the gold and silver was and I couldn't find it.
You were driving past sites.
The thing is, like, yeah, so that it wasn't just a purely online investigation. Here's the thing, Robert, we're going to get into this because this is one of the critical issues that I have with ASIC. So this was not just a purely paper-based investigation. No, there was physical inspections. I was moving around parts of New South Wales to see, based on the leads I had, is there any evidence in terms of where it is? Now, ASIC gets it on the 6th of April, and this is again, you know, my barrister, Noel Comer, said this is perhaps one of the most comprehensive files of evidence he's ever seen. He said, usually ASIC starts an investigation of a minuscule piece of information. This was well thought out, very comprehensive.
I saw it as you showed it to me, right? It was what you call the package. So that's why I recognise some of the things you're talking about. And we should mention that you've mentioned your barrister's name. He's an ex-ASIC investigator himself.
That's correct.
He knows of what he speaks. Plus, there was one other ex-ASIC investigator that you consulted with a lot on this, as well as lawyers, etc. So I was not involved in your investigation, but you and I talk pretty much every day, very early in the morning, and you were giving me blow-by-blow updates on the interesting aspects of this. While I was giving you updates on things like the Sterling inquiry, etc., and I could tell from your updates, although I couldn't follow it as super closely as you, I could tell how thorough you were being. That was my overwhelming impression on all those months of you doing this. I could tell the thoroughness that you were applying to your investigation.
Yes, and just for the record, it was only after I went to ASIC did I tell Robbie who the company was. So yeah, Jim and I do this. You kept trying to probe. You know, what are you actually investigating?
Are you talking about?
Exactly. So you know, there was a number of sort of, you know, trying to be careful. Now, once I went to ASIC, this is why I triggered the ASIC inquiry, because after spending 10 months and tens of thousands of dollars on advice and trying to understand how this all works, because again, I didn't know any of this. I mean, you compare my knowledge now in terms of the law, in terms of investigations, in terms of evidence, in terms of how to collect evidence compared to 2021. It's like I've had a second career, Robbie. So yeah, it took a lot of time to really get my head around what am I actually trying to achieve here and how do I put the case together. And so we begged ASIC, me and my team, to present our case theory to ASIC, to take their questions, and to make sure they actually understood the material. ASIC refused to talk to us. And that was the point I said there's something fundamentally wrong here, because, and the reason why is I had a barrister, but I had the consultant who I had is a former ASIC senior executive who led the Office of Enforcement, or what was then the Office of Enforcement, and he left ASIC in 2011. He's the greatest investigator in ASIC history. He did HIH, he put 12 people in jail. He is a super thorough investigator. Because I would say to this person, if you were still at ASIC, how would you treat this matter? And he said, the first thing I would do, as you as the complainant with this detailed file of evidence, I would bring you in and have a conversation. ASIC refused to do that with me. Now, I ended up having a meeting with ASIC in July of 2022, but that was only because they wanted access to the whistleblower, because we had presented the whistleblower as someone who was at that point anonymous. So now, it took them 90 days to start the investigation. So the chance of getting an ASIC investigation is like 0.036%. So, and how did we get it? Because after the Jeff Morris scandal that happened pre-Royal Commission, Parliament changed the rules for whistleblowers and basically said that ASIC has 90 days to assess a whistleblower complaint. And if they don't take action, the law says they must take action. If they don't, then the whistleblower has the right, the legal right, to either make a disclosure to the press or make a disclosure to to a parliamentarian, and they are still protected by the law. So we kept on saying ASIC, it's day 30, day 45, day 60, 70, 80, 90. What the hell are you doing? All ASIC would say is, we're making inquiries. I said, no, that's not enough. You've got to tell us something more concrete. Are you investigating or are you not investigating? So, because I said the 90-day time period is about to kick in, and we're going to go public if you don't come to the party. So they basically then starts the investigation. 13 months, $300,000 expenditure.
And they like playing that part up.
They do, and then they send me a letter on the 10th of August last year, and they said after a thorough investigation, we find no evidence of a crime. So now, there was a second package, and ABC Bullion was subject to a second investigation. We won't get into that one today. No. But what I did was, from September of last year through to May of this year, me and a team of people retraced the ASIC investigation. And this is the first time in Australian history that anyone's been able to do this to this level of detail. We bombarded ASIC with FOI request. Senator Roberts helped us with questions on notice via the ASIC inquiry to ASIC about the ABC bully investigation. And we have a detailed timeline about what happened and what did ASIC do. Now, we know what ASIC did. What we don't know is what ASIC was told. But here is the key issue that blew up with Michael West Media this week, and we'll put this on the screen. So we knew that there was some bullying in a location called 74 Castle Ray Street in Sydney. Now, ABC bullying claims that there was more bullying elsewhere, but we don't know where those places are. This place, the 74 Castle Ray Street in Sydney, was a legal premises. It was legal, kosher. But the ASIC starts the investigation on the 4th of July. They tell ABC bullying on the 7th of July, you're under investigation. And they did so by issuing them what they call a Section 30 notice to ask them for the production of books and records. And then we have an email in which the general manager of ABC Bullion, Jordan Licio, says that for one particular investor who was part of my investigation team, he said, we moved your property from 74 Castle Ray Street to a place in Marrickville called 2 Lillian Fowler Place, Marrickville, 3.5 weeks into the investigation. So now the question is, why did they start moving bullion around 3.5 weeks into the ASIC investigation? That's a big question, because it obviously suggests that evidence was being, so the state of the evidence that was there in July 22, it was being moved around, and they admit they moved it around. Now the question is why. Now, to the issue of,
because the essence of what ASIC needed to look at based on what you were alleging is, is there a vault with the bullion to back up what ABC says?
Correct.
And instead of looking at that straight away, they issue this letter, and then bullion starts being moved around.
Starts being moved around. Now, when I go to Parliament, and I've spoken to many advisors in the coalition, in the opposition, and I say to them, if I tell you there's an allegation, again, not my allegation, the employee's allegation, that gold and silver is missing, How long would you expect ASIC investigators to take before you go physically look for the bullion?
Yeah.
So when I was about a month ago in the office of Luke Howarth, the Shadow Minister for Financial Services, I asked the advisors, and they go, well, surely straight away. Well, this is the scandal. ASIC did not physically leave the office for 9.5 months, even though this place on 74 Castle Ray Street in Sydney was literally 500 metres from ASIC Sydney office. They literally a 2-minute walk. It took them 9.5 months. They did not leave the office. And in that 9.5 months, who appeared and did something which is extraordinary in Australian history? The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese. On the 14th of October 2022, the Prime Minister holds a national press conference at this building, 2 Lillian Fowler Place, Marrickville, and gives an explicit endorsement of ABC Bullion, its parent company Pallion, and the directors of the company who the ATO have been in pursuit for over a decade.
And he even tweeted that explicit endorsement, naming the companies in his tweet.
Well, not only did he do a tweet, there was an official press conference, there was a publication on the Prime Minister's website, there's a publication on the Minister for Industry's website who was with him that day. And when that happened, I still remember, I'm on the train going from Sydney back to Wollongong, and who calls me? Robbie Barwick. And he says to me, you're not going to believe what's happened. I said, what, Robbie? The Prime Minister has just endorsed ABC Bullion today. I said, you're kidding me. During a criminal investigation, the Prime Minister endorses the company. What an extraordinary set of circumstances. And so now, again, I've talked to people in Parliament, and they said, well, he may not have known that the investigation took place, and this press conference may have been inadvertent, etc. I'd say two things to that. The first thing is, The issues of the tax office, and I've been told by people on the inside, the ATO has spent tens of millions of dollars pursuing these group of people in terms of what they call a GST carousel tax scheme.
So their reputation existing was such that the Prime Minister shouldn't have anything to do with them.
Well, here's the thing. All I'll say is, the Prime Minister could not have been completely ignorant of this group's history, given that the ATO matter was well before the courts and there was things happening live.
Someone in the PM's office is supposed to vet every place he goes to.
Correct.
To do these kind of things, right? This is not acceptable, like in the way they usually manage this kind of stuff. This is quite extraordinary.
Indeed. And so when I've spoken to my former boss, Senator Arthur Sinodinos, who was John Howard's chief of staff for 9 years, and I said to him, you hear of a situation where a prime minister endorses a company during a live criminal investigation. The Sinodinos told me last year when we met up in Sydney, he goes, this is unprecedented. He goes, never heard anything like this. It's just an extraordinary circumstance. And so in the 9.5 months, prime minister endorses the company. And then they obviously, after 9.5 months, they did an audit using Deloitte. Then they came to a conclusion, no evidence of being found. Now, here are two key things that have been, well, one's been confirmed, one's in contention. Let's talk about the thing that's confirmed. So the big revelation of Michael West Media this week is that the building at 2 Leighton Fowler Place, Marrickville, was not occupied legally. It was illegally occupied because they were doing a redevelopment. Under New South Wales law, you need to do what they call a change of use if you're changing the use of the building. And so it used to be a food processing manufacturing plant. And then they said, we want to make it into a high-tech industrial manufacturing plant for precious metals. So they whatever they had, they moved it. They had it from a legal premises to an illegal premises. And the reason why I can say it's illegal is because 2 weeks ago, the Inner West Council, so the council where I went and made my complaint, they have sent me a letter and saying that sufficient evidence exists, that breaches occurred, and they have taken enforcement action. And they said this conduct of illegally occupying the building constitutes unlawful conduct. So the reason why this is important, Robbie, is that I didn't make allegations in 2023 when they look for the gold or the silver. I said, based on the evidence we had, I'm making allegations of things that I learned in 2021. Mm. So if you're going to investigate a matter, well, the allegation, you have to try to assess the evidence in when the allegation was made or when the evidence was collected.
Yep.
Because some of these employees who were making all sorts of comments about ABC Bullion, these were comments made in 2021 about the company's conduct. So now, the question it becomes is, well, why would you move bullion from a legal premises to an illegal premises? That is the $64 million question. So the company has, in writing, given two explanations for why they've done this. So the first one is they said, we started operating from this building at 2 Leighton Fowler Place, Marrickville, after a 3-year design, construction, and fit-out process. Well, that can't be true. One is because they didn't sign the lease until May of 2021, 14 months earlier. And obviously, we know that the council has now declared that the occupation in July 2022 was illegal. And then the second reason they said is that they had a storage consolidation plan. So they had bullion in multiple locations, and they had a plan to consolidate it to this particular building, pre-scheduled for July 2022.
Right.
It just so happens, coincidental with the ASIC investigation, and it was 2 years in the works. So now on this issue was, is there a consolidation plan? We went to ASIC via a Freedom of Information request, and we asked, please hand over the documents about the ABC Bullion consolidation plan. ASIC wrote to the investor who we worked with on the 6th of May of this year and said, we have no documents pertaining to a consolidation plan. So if there was a consolidation plan, Robbie, surely as part of this $300,000 investigation, ASIC would be able to obtain this plan. So they don't. But here's the thing. ASIC concluded an investigation when illegal, unlawful conduct was occurring, according to the council. And the reason why this unlawful conduct is significant is because it potentially, and again, the insurance, so there's an insurance broker in the Sutherland Shire, the Cronulla area, who provides the policies to ABC Bullion. they refused to disclose whether they knew the building was legal or illegal. Because if they, well, here's the thing, if they were told, that there's no insurance company in the world that would offer a policy knowing that it was illegal. But then if they were not told, it, under federal law, the insurance company has the right to void the contract. And so people have been investing in the storage program of ABC Bullion for the last 2 years with the knowledge or with the assumption that it was legal storage and it was properly insured. So the insurance is a question mark because we don't know what the insurance company was told, but we have the council saying it was illegal. So how did ASIC come to such a bad and wrong conclusion? Because one could say, one could construct the argument, this is the argument that I've effectively instructed to the NAC. People inside ASIC is saying they're corrupt.
Yep.
And so we have a situation where 3.5 weeks into an ASIC criminal investigation, illegal behavior occurs with evidence being altered. The council has declared it to be illegal. The prime minister endorses the company. And how do you come to the conclusion that there was nothing wrong in terms of the company? Because if ASIC knew, and this is the key issue, if ASIC knew that illegal activity was occurring during the investigation, well, that is corruption. Because we're not paying ASIC officials to investigate and allow evidence to be altered in an illegal fashion. So that's the thing is, but then obviously if ASIC didn't know that it was illegal, why haven't they taken any action? That's why we've gone to the NAC, and that's why Michael West Media has now published it and called it a bungled investigation. Because if Longo or Sarah Court are calling up investigators and saying, we want you to drop this ABC bullying matter, no, you must follow the evidence. If the evidence says that it was illegal, you must take action because investors have been misled.
Yep.
So that's what happened there. Now, let me just quickly get to the issue of the audit. ASIC refused to get a search warrant, hired Deloitte. Now, it took them 3 months to sign up Deloitte because they required 3 different proposals from Deloitte for what reasons we don't know.
Hang on, quickly. ABC's in a hurry to move bullion around. ASIC's clearly not in a hurry.
exactly. And can I say, I have one of the lawyers who I used from based in Sydney, who worked in ASIC from 2020 to 2022, said that when you want an expert to give you an independent assessment as part of an investigation, she worked in the investigation team, you can get someone within days. Mm. Why take 3 months? So the investigation starts in July of 2022, they don't sign Deloitte up until February 2023. So there's meetings between ASIC and ABC Bullion in January, February, and March of 2023. ASIC tells them we're going to do an audit. So they have plenty of notice about knowing that the audit was coming. But here's the critical thing. So even though that they know that they knew that something was coming, and because they weren't willing to get a search warrant, they basically said, okay, we need your permission to come into your property. Okay, fine, but we need some prerequisites. Everyone has to have a police check.
Yeah.
So Deloitte had to have a police check because that was a requirement of ABC Bullion. And there was a number of other things that happened in the investigation. But then just to make sure that ABC Bullion knew that ASIC and Deloitte were coming, the first site inspection happened on the 28th of April, 2023. And what happened on the 10 days beforehand? ASIC gives them 10 days notice. So we're telling you for months, we're coming, Deloitte's involved, we're going to do an audit. But just to be sure you know exactly when to make sure everything looks proper, we're coming in 10 days' time and we'll be at your first premises on the 28th of April. The second one happened, the second site inspection on the 2nd of May, the 4th of May, and the 11th of May. Now, here's where we get into a contentious moment. We have a new whistleblower who has emerged in the last few months. And this second whistleblower says that in this 10-day period of late April, bullying moved around again. So because they knew that Deloitte was about to walk into certain premises, this new whistleblower says, he was instructed to pack up a large volume, about a ton of gold and silver, and ship it from parts of Australia to Sydney for reasons he was not told why, but there were rumours about a pending audit. So there was rumours among the staff, something's going on, something serious. It's not a normal sort of situation. And this person says in their new whistleblower statement, he had been there for a number of years. This was the first time he had ever received such an instruction. But it's in this 10-day period, in late April, when ASIC says, we've done an audit, it's all this sort of stuff, this person says, the bully moved around again. Now, again, why? This whistleblower makes allegations. So we don't know. But here's, and here's the most disturbing thing. In the last few months, and I'll say this, because this is really gets down to the corruption. ASIC was prepared to have a voluntary interview with this new whistleblower. But then when this whistleblower says, I want our interview to be recorded, I want a transcript, ASIC says, we no longer want to talk to you. I kid you not, Robbie. So when people write to us and saying there is corruption, so if so, and again, I talked to former ASIC investigators and they said it is not unusual for people to want a transcript. It's not unusual for people to ask for a Section 19 legal notice. But when ASIC says, if there's no record of the conversation, we'll talk to you. But once there's a record, we refuse to consider your evidence. That is systematic corruption. And so we're now in a situation where we haven't confirmed the building was illegal. Illegal conduct did take place. It's not defamatory. It's not injurious falsehood. Illegal conduct did take place during the ASIC investigation. ASIC used Commonwealth money to facilitate the Prime Minister's friends to effectively rig an investigation to the conclusion that there was no evidence of a crime. And now we have a situation where the media is starting to report about it. We have investors considering legal action in the courts. We have Senator Roberts. Senator Roberts has attempted on three occasions in the last 11 months to ask the Deputy Chair Court, Deputy Chair Sarah Court, questions about this ABC bullying investigation. On three occasions, she refused to provide any substantive answers. ASIC is ASIC is concealing their state of knowledge on these events. And here's the other thing, Robbie. I knew about it. We were very creative of how to discover about the moving of the bullion and going to the illegal building, etc. So there's a whole host of records that ASIC obtained during their investigation, which I have not seen. So this is one of the other big questions is, if ASIC missed that bullion was moved from a legal place to an illegal place, what else did they miss? Because as you say, I tend to be extremely thorough, and I had a very good investigation team. So if ASIC provided us all of the ABC bullion material, would we come to the conclusion that there was nothing wrong, or would we be able to pick the evidence apart and actually find the evidence that that our first whistleblower had alleged?
But there's a pattern here. ASIC not wanting to talk to you from the beginning to get insights into the case. ASIC not wanting to give this whistleblower a transcript. Sarah Court not wanting to answer questions about it. ASIC is clearly an agency that wants to be a black box and not ever have to explain the reasons it makes its decisions, and we're all just supposed to accept that. And I think, John, the difficulty ASIC has in this particular case is they're not used to dealing with someone like yourself. They've well and truly met their match. As I've said before, our understanding of ASIC came about by dealing with financial victims, and when financial victims deal with ASIC, for whom ASIC is universally a trigger word, after having gone through this terrible trauma in their life where they've lost all their money, etc., and they expect ASIC to play a certain role, a policing role, and they try and deal with ASIC, and they all have a universally bad experience, and it becomes such a trigger word for them. Every single one of those financial victims that ASIC deals with is dazed and confused and bankrupt, and they're at their worst in trying to deal with ASIC. They've never dealt with someone like yourself who is more than a match for their way of operating. You've been one step ahead of them, and now all they can hope is that with the backing of the Albanese government, that as much as you stomp and scream in forums like this, they're just hoping that the whole thing can be ignored, but you're clearly not going away.
No. We're going to see very shortly litigation in the courts over this issue. But again, the issue here, Robbie, is, you know, ABC Bullion's one issue, but the bigger issue is obviously ASIC, and the evidence is just so damning. An inquiry report says that they have comprehensively failed and the culture is sick. ASIC whistleblowers writing to you and me saying there is corruption. We have an investigation where illegal activity central to the allegations took place, and ASIC says nothing to see. We have systemic corruption at the regulator. I will not live in a country that's systemically corrupt. I'm not paying taxes to bureaucrats to rig investigations, and we are going to prosecute this to the nth degree, and we're going to find out very shortly what was ASIC told, what did they know when, and did any conversations happen between the government, Longo, and court, and did court pick up the phone and actually instruct investigators to look one way or the other way? Because we know that's happening in other investigations, yeah. But did it happen in this investigation? We have a lot of information, Robbie, that we've collected over the last three and a half years. There's still a lot more to go. But the reason why this is so important, and can I just say this? Some people said to me, well, an occupation certificate is a minor, trivial matter in the course of other matters. But again, the reason why this is important is it was critical for ASIC to assess the evidence at the time of the investigation. They allowed the evidence to be altered in a way that was illegal. And so if they did, so their assessment of the bullion was in 2023 in a circumstance that was illegal. Now, did they have it all then? Was something missing? Well, I don't know. I can't say for sure whether it is or not, but we have whistleblowers saying that the audit, and here's the other thing with this audit report. Senator Bragg asked for the audit report, the 41-page Deloitte report. ASIC refuses to show Parliament the Deloitte report. So do I accept the Deloitte report? 100% not. No one's ever seen it. We have whistleblowers saying that the results are manipulated. And whether investors want to have confidence in the Deloitte report or not, I do not accept the findings of the Deloitte report until I see the methodology, until I see what was actually done, and whether this movement of the metal that happened in April of 2023, whether that was material to the results or not. Until those questions are answered, I basically don't accept anything that ASIC and Deloitte did. We just got to clean this up.
Yep. John, I'll point out we've gone a bit over time compared to what we sort of planned this to be.
Yes.
But I think the devil's in the detail, and it's actually quite instructive to go through that particular case. And I appeal to the viewer, keep the big picture in your head, because what you've seen in John's recounting of this investigation is, as I said, how thorough he was and covering literally every base. But you're also seeing, if you have any sense of, or you're a long time viewer, or you have any sense of how long we've been at this, you've also seen relentlessness and sticking a laser focus on this, because as you say, and I agree, we can't live in a country where we accept this kind of corruption. Do not be the Aussies that just shrug your shoulders and sort of expect that this is the way it works. No, that's not good enough. We cannot just say, oh yeah, of course they're going to be corrupt. No. There's so much at stake here, and the way you get breakthroughs is you have to stay focused on it. We've just had our party's had our own little example. It's not so little. We've as we announced on our show this week, people might have seen it by now, we've finally got a breakthrough where the government looks like it's finally looking at a postal bank. We've been relentless on that for 4 years, almost an entirely our focus, and you eventually push it to a result, right? That's how you get results. You've been relentless on this, ASIC, and ASIC is one of our issues as well, and you've just given us a very live example of that, and I hope the viewers can see that. And we're going to keep writing this because something has to give here, right?
Absolutely.
Something has to give, and we're not going to back away just because we decide that, oh, we're bored with this subject. No, this the future of our country is at stake based on the outcome of these fights.
And I'll just finish on this, Robbie. The reason why we have to keep on this is that this is not an isolated instance. If this was a one-off, then you can say, okay, bad investigation, yeah. It happened from time to time. We are hearing a repeated pattern of mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes at work. I make plenty of mistakes. But you make mistakes, and then there's allegations of consistent mistakes to the point that it seems to be intentional, to the point that ASIC people are writing to YouTubers like Robbie and I and saying the corruption is 100% real. It's time we clean up this country.
John, thank you very much for dropping in again today.
Thank you.
Thanks to the viewer for spending the time with us, and look forward to more updates on this in future episodes of the Citizens Insight.